Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince us that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, well, we ask you to hold your calls. I'm going to ask my producer to call the number on the sheet there right now and see if we can get our special guest on for this evening. But we hope to have with us Thomas Friend, who's written a fascinating book about the influence of the satanic movement on Led Zeppelin and on rock music. Now, many of you have heard our conversations with Joe Schimmel in the past, and if you haven't, why, you've missed an awful lot. But we have some excellent interviews with Joe Schimmel, Pastor Joe Schimmel, who started out writing rock music. Wonderful songs. He was able to come. In fact, he didn't even know where the music came from. It just sort of came out of nowhere. And then the lyrics, they all made sense, except they were perfect rhymes, except he didn't know what a lot of the words were. And then he looked them up, and yes, they did make sense. And then suddenly he realized that these were coming from another dimension, another source. And as time went by, he came to realize he was demonically possessed. And so he eventually was able to overcome this and became a Christian minister. And he's put together some wonderful videos called, the ones we carry. We have the Sources of the New World Order, and we have a number of the videos that Joe has put together. But we, of course, encourage people to get they sold their souls for rock and roll, both the 10 and the 4-hour versions of that. But a book that goes very well along with that is a book written by our special guest this evening, Mr. Thomas Friend. And the book is entitled Fallen Angel. Thomas, thank you so much for being with us. Let's see if we can get Thomas on here. Hi, Thomas. How are you?
Okay, sir. How's everything?
I'm doing just fine, and I've just been introducing your book to our listeners here. Why don't you tell our listeners these listeners have not heard you before. You've been on our other programs, but not on this program. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, how you get interested in this most popular of the rock bands? What was that during the 1990s and 1980s, Led Zeppelin?
Actually, sir, it was during the 1970s when I was in high school.
All right, fine. So why don't you tell our listeners your interest in them and then what you eventually found as you began studying them. So you pick up the story from there.
In my junior year of 1977, I saw Led Zeppelin in concert at Madison Square Garden in New York City. And it was then that I began what I would call discipleship of the band. I mean, I gathered all their albums. They were definitely my favorite band. Jimmy Page was my favorite guitarist. And I was just enraptured by them, enchanted, if you will. And what I came to find out after my study of the band and the people that they were into, their mentors, mainly Aleister Crowley, the black magician from England, I found out that magic was being used on the audience, and something that I experienced during the concert that I thought was just a result of my own drug use ended up becoming something more vivid in the occult realm, which was actually supernatural power being exercised by Jimmy Page on stage with his violin bow and his theremin machine that created demonic sounds, in conjunction with a book that he republished by Aleister Crowley in 1976 on conjuring demons to manipulate the minds of people that he worked magic on. And all these things came together, and I began to see what Led Zeppelin was really propagating in their music, which was Luciferian magic as defined by Aleister Crowley's writings. Crowley's writings were just transformed into the music, especially Stairway to Heaven. And from that point, I began to decipher the writings of Crowley as I collected them and compare them to the lyrics of Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, and I began to put this book together. It started a long time ago, but it came to fruition just a few years ago, and it's 648 pages. It tells the whole story of Jimmy Page and Robert Plant's promotion of Aleister Crowley and his magical cult called the Argentium Astrum, which means Silver Star, which was founded in England.
And basically, this was truly demonic. They were actually playing games with the minds of these tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of young people who came to their concerts. And wasn't Highway to Heaven one of the most popular songs of all time?
Stairway to Heaven, to this day, is still voted as the most popular song in the history of rock and roll. Year after year, on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean, it's still the number one requested song on all the FM radio stations. It's timeless. Even Robert Plant and Jimmy Page said that it was being pushed forward by a supernatural source, and they said that they were musical mediums.
I think this is really what's so important, is that they were musical mediums. They were simply channels for the devil's message into the minds of our youth. And as incredible as it may seem to a lot of people out there, this is what goes on in our society today. And, of course, it's not simply in rock and roll. It's in many other mediums. But this is the one, that, of course, that our guest this evening, Thomas Friend, has written about so well in his book, Fallen Angel. And, of course, to understand any of this, we have to understand the man named Aleister Crowley, who had bought a house on Loch Ness and was known by people who knew him and really understood him as the other Loch Ness monster. So why don't you tell us about Aleister Crowley, certainly one of the most evil men of all time, a man who had dedicated his life to Satan. And, of course, among his disciples were people like Timothy Leary, who led the drug revolution in the 1960s, and Alfred Kinsey, who led the sexual revolution, and Harry Hay, who led the gay liberation movement, and many others. So why don't you tell our listeners what you learned about this man, Aleister Crowley? He was truly a demonically possessed, and yet he influenced so many people throughout the world.
In 1910, Aleister Crowley wrote a book called The World's Tragedy. And this quote comes from that book. That religion they call Christianity, the devil they honor they call God. I accept these definitions as a poet must do, if he is to be at all intelligible to his age. And it is their God and their religion that I hate and will destroy.
And in other words, he wanted to destroy Christianity, didn't he?
Absolutely. But that was subsequent to his adopted belief that Lucifer was in fact God. A couple of years before that, Crowley said this. Quote, I was in death struggle with self. God and Satan fought for my soul those three long hours. God conquered. Now I have only one doubt left. Which of the twain was God? Crowley so corrupted himself that he couldn't understand. He lost the moral code that was originally in his mind that points to Christ. And Satan was able to deceive him. And then Crowley even vacillated and told his readers this. I accepted the theology of the Plymouth Brethren, a sect of Christianity that his family came from. In fact, I could hardly conceive of the existence of people who might doubt it. I simply went over to Satan's side, and to this hour I cannot tell why. And then he said this, quote, I had been almost overwhelmed by the appalling responsibility of ensuring my own damnation and helping others to escape from Jesus. Now, this is just not a remote individual. He's known as the most famous Satanist to ever live. His face is on the front of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album. Ringo Starr said he was one of the people they liked. John Lennon loved the man. He quoted him. And the Rolling Stones hail him as a great man. All the members of Led Zeppelin hail him as a great man. Marilyn Manson today and Hall and Oates, all these people are advocating the writings of Aleister Crowley. He just gave himself over to the devil. But one of the most important things he taught his followers, that if they got into magic, especially a musician, he said this, a musician may be rapt away by majestic melodies such as he never hoped to hear. Now, Crowley wrote that because he said anybody who gets into Lucifer will hear music right out of thin air, and that's what Crowley bought Bolskin House on Loch Ness in England, in Scotland, to do, was to unite with Lucifer through magic. 70 years later, Jimmy Page bought that house, And within a year, Page produced the Stairway to Heaven album. Robert Plant and John Paul Jones all said that Page produced the music for that album at Volscian House. And that's exactly what Crowley said. Anybody that united with Lucifer would hear music right out of nowhere. And then Page made this statement in 1995, talking about the reunion of him and Robert Plant to play Led Zeppelin's music. Quote, "When we first got back together, it was so immediately apparent that the two of us were just channeling the music. That's what we had always had, and it was so apparent that it was there. It was almost effortless." So here you have the writings of Aleister Crowley telling magicians to get into Lucifer, and they would hear music out of nowhere. And then Page himself claims he's a musical medium.
And I think it's so important for our listeners to understand that this is what our young people are listening to. And their minds are being taken over by demonic forces. And, oh, you can sort of scoff at that. Well, you don't necessarily even believe in Lucifer. Well, I believe Lucifer is real. I believe the devil is real. I believe evil is real. And that explains the wars and certainly the great plagues that are sweeping our world that we're not even really trying to stop. We talk about trying to stop AIDS. We're not trying to stop the AIDS epidemic. If we are, we're doing the worst job in the world. If we're trying to facilitate it and kill off people in Africa and India, we couldn't be doing a more successful job. And the only way to understand this is to understand that we are dealing with organized evil. And anybody who has not yet seen that, a clipping out of the Chicago Tribune, we'd be glad to send you one. It was August of 1945, pointing out the Japanese had been trying for 6 months to surrender before we signed the peace treaty with them, and the invasion of Okinawa, and of Iwo Jima, and the dropping of the bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Totally unnecessary. The Japanese had been trying to surrender for 6 months. We wouldn't let them. Why? Because there really are people out there who want total destruction and depravity and horror and human suffering. And these are the people who embrace this Luciferian religion. And until we recognize the presence of evil, we can't understand so much of what's going on. And that's why I think that Thomas Friend's book is so powerful. Incidentally, did you ever get those books off to us?
Yes, sir, they're on the way.
All right, fine, because we've got a fair number. We got to carry this book, because I think it's a very, very important book for you to be able to read this. And then, of course, you would like to see many of these people in concert. We have that on the video. They sold their souls for rock and roll. But here you actually, I have the words, and he's gone into, Thomas done a great job of summarizing the writings of Aleister Crowley. So if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment you'd like to direct towards our guest this evening, our number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, of course, is Jimmy Page still around? Is he and Robert Plant still playing music, touring the world, or what?
In 2000, Jimmy Page toured the United States with a group called the Black Crowes, but they still played all of Led Zeppelin's music. In 2001, and I believe 2002, Robert Plant toured the United States playing Led Zeppelin's music with his band. And there's talk in the air that Jimmy Page and Robert Plant are going to reunite again. And the thing about my book is, as I wrote underneath the subtitle, it's based on the Stairway to Heaven album. Now, this album was produced in November of 1971, but it's still contemporary, as it sells 4,000 to 5,000 copies every week in the United States alone. It's up over 23 million copies sold in the United States alone, according to the Recording Industry Association of America.
23 million copies of this album?
Only one album has sold more copies, and that's Michael Jackson's Thriller, which was nothing but a demonic album in itself.
Well, of course, Michael Jackson is also involved in this whole world satanic movement, and don't think for 1 minute he isn't. But be that as it may, let's stick pretty well with it, Led Zeppelin. And, of course, this tremendous impact on the minds of a generation of our youth. Remember those young people who were out there at the concerts a generation ago. Many of them are sitting in the House of the Legislature or teaching in our schools today. Do you think most people ever realized the demonic nature of the music or of the agenda, the fact that the music they were actually hearing was channeled from a demonic source?
Absolutely not. And Aleister Crowley used to joke and say that incredulity suited him and his followers fine, because those who don't want to believe in it, the band would just say it's just tongue-in-cheek, our talk about Satan. But then those who see that they're serious can then take up the writings of Crowley and become disciples. So they give people what they want. They give the people who are seeking magic and the occult the information they want, and they give tongue-in-cheek excuses to the masses that don't want to believe. And then they criticize us and say that we're the crazy ones because we see exactly what they're doing.
And trying to expose what they're doing. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling in here from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question or comment?
I guess it's a combo, but it was like with Led Zeppelin, like with the movie, The Song Remains the Same. They made it into somewhat of a beautiful movie that you watched, and they just kind of sank it by you on all the Satanist stuff.
But, no, of course, was this a movie about Jimmy Page and Robert Plant?
Yeah, it was a movie about Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
But my main question is how do you deal with the Satanist people around you? I mean, I have a few around that I just say, well, you know, vengeance is the Lord. I'm not going to go out and do anything. But how do you deal with those people that are around you?
All right, that's a fair question. Thomas, Mike is asking, he lives in Santa Cruz, and I'll tell you, this is one of the centers for Satanism. It has been for many years. So he comes in contact with some of these people who are frankly Satanists. What should he be doing?
Well, Mike, I want you to know I'm very familiar with Santa Cruz. I've been to Aptos a number of times.
Have you ever been to SoCal?
Yes, I have. I've been to SoCal, Salinas, the whole area,
sure.
San Francisco. The only way to deal with error is to know what the truth is. And when it comes to my book, I've given you the truth from Crowley's writings as he presented. I give you the truth about Crowley and about what his writings promote, including the scriptures. I give you the Holy Scriptures presentation of Lucifer. I give you Crowley's presentation of Lucifer, and you're able to see who's right and who's wrong and how Lucifer has presented himself in Led Zeppelin's music. Once you're educated into the detail of Led Zeppelin's music, the Word of God, and Aleister Crowley's occult writings, you're then armed with the information you need to show these people their error. For instance, you were mentioning The Song Remains the Same. You can show them in the movie, in the song, Dazed and Confused. In the early going, Jimmy Page picks up the guitar and he slams it to his right, and Robert Plant walks up to the microphone and says, in a strange tone of voice, he says, "Silly human, I love you. Sell him all of your life." And then he steps back away from the microphone, and Jimmy Page tears into this 30-second lead that's blazing, and then they go into the old 1966-68 San Francisco song by Scott McKenzie. The song goes, "If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. If you're going to San Francisco, you're going to meet a lot of gentle people there." Robert Plant sings it this way: "If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. If you're going to San Francisco, you're going to meet a lot of devil people there."
Yeah, I remember that part. Yeah.
That's less than a minute after telling the fans, "Silly human, I love you. Sell him all of your life." And we know that the First Church of Satan was founded by Anton LaVey in San Francisco in 1966. So there they just told the fans to sell their souls to Lucifer in a two-part message. And in Stairway to Heaven, Robert Plant said, "And if you listen very hard, the tune, which is a music's hidden message, will come to you at last."
And I think, Michael, one thing you're going to have to do is just pray for these people.
Yeah.
And pray for them, and you know, through the years I've prayed for some of the doctors who I practiced with. It was amazing how many that God touched and really did bring to the Lord. That's the most powerful weapon you have. And, of course, pray for God's protection for yourself, but pray that God will show them the truth of their error, their ways, and maybe even want to bring them to our meeting we're going to have on the 6th of November. We're going to be talking about that right here in Santa Cruz, the Heart of Devil's Community. That's the 6th of November when we're having our all-day meeting.
You give them a prayer, too.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, these guests this evening is Thomas Friend, and we're talking about the Led Zeppelin, one of the most popular of all the rock groups, and their song, Stairway to Heaven, the most popular of all songs. It's still selling, you know, on a regular basis, you know, literally hundreds and hundreds of those are going out every month. Sold 23 million copies. And the people memorize the words, they sing the words, they know the words, but they really don't understand that this is all satanic. Until people understand that Satan is not imaginary, he's not a theory, he is real, and he is one of the dominant forces in the world today. And God has given us the choice. We can choose him, or we can choose the dark side. And the great tragedy is we're bringing the devil's music into our churches today. And the saying by one of the leading ministers today, there is no such thing as Christian music. There's only Christian lyrics. And as long as the lyrics are all right, you can use any music you want to. Well, I believe this. Some of this music comes right out of the pit of hell. Don't you?
Jimmy Page said, rock and roll is expletive you music, and he was referring to sex there. He says rock and roll is sex music. That's where Alan Freed got the term from a prostitute in Cleveland in 1955. She said, we rock them and then we roll them for their money. It's all got to do with sex. Now, you cannot promote music that inspires the sex drive in teenagers in the church with Jesus Loves Me lyrics. It's going to be counterproductive. It's antithetical to itself. You cannot produce a godly message with an ungodly method.
And I don't think that an awful lot of even good Christians understand that. I don't think a lot of good Christian ministers understand that they've compromised their principles with music that certainly does not honor God. And the whole idea of rock and roll was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Wasn't that sort of the slogan of the 60s?
The 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and currently. The whole song, Stairway to Heaven, is not just about music or following the devil, but it's about becoming born again in the direction of Lucifer. Richie York, a personal friend of the band, wrote that Stairway to Heaven conveyed the message of rebirth in his book, Led Zeppelin, The Definitive Biography. Quote, the appeal of Stairway to Heaven as a musical piece is self-evident. Its lyrics seem to embody the individual's prevailing quest for spiritual rebirth. Stephen Davis in Hammer of the Gods presented the same thing, tying spiritual rebirth in with going back to the worship of the old gods. Quote, with its starkly pagan imagery of trees and brooks, pipers and the May Queen, shining white light in the forest echoing with laughter, Stairway to Heaven seemed like an invitation to abandon the new traditions and follow the old gods. It expressed an ineffable yearning for spiritual transformation deep in the hearts of the generation for which it was intended. In time, it became their anthem. Now, he mentioned going back to worship the old gods. Well, here was Aleister Crowley's pitch to his followers and to their new students, their neophytes, to worship Pan, who Crowley said was Lucifer. He said this about worshiping Pan in the forest. Quote, Arcadia, night, a cloud, Pan and the moon. What words to conjure with, what five shouts to slay the five senses, and set a leaping flame of emerald and silver dancing about us, as we yell them forth under the oaks and over the rocks and the myrtle of the hillside.
Hold that thought right there. We're going to bring our stations. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, our guest this evening is Thomas Friend. We're talking about his book, A Fallen Angel. And you really need to read this book. You need to get this to young people who are into this demonic music, because this music is designed from the very pit of hell to capture their imagination and to control their emotions. Would you mind, and I realize that you just read that quotation, but it's so important, would you mind reading that quotation again that you were just using? Because now we have, of course, people returned on some of the stations that we're not listening for just a moment. Go ahead.
I'll just reiterate the theme of rebirth that Stairway to Heaven promotes in the worship of Pan the Piper, the god of the forest, who Aleister Crowley said was Lucifer in disguise. In Led Zeppelin, the definitive biography, Richie York, a personal friend of the band, wrote, quote, the appeal of Stairway to Heaven as a musical piece is self-evident. Its lyrics seem to embody the individual's prevailing quest for a spiritual rebirth. Stephen Davis, in his book about Led Zeppelin, Hammer of the Gods, wrote this, quote, with its starkly pagan imagery of trees and brooks, Pipers and the May Queen, shining white light and the forest echoing with laughter. Stairway to Heaven seemed like an invitation to abandon the new traditions and follow the old gods. It expressed an ineffable yearning for spiritual transformation deep in the hearts of the generation for which it was intended. In time, it became their anthem. Now, he said it was about spiritual rebirth and worshiping the old gods. Well, Aleister Crowley said, Arcadia, night, a cloud, Pan, and the moon. What words to conjure with, meaning conjuring spirits? What five shouts to slay the five senses? Instead, a leaping flame of emerald and silver dancing about us as we yell them forth under the oaks and over the rocks and myrtle of the hillside, like the druids would do. Bruised to the breast of Pan, let us flee church and chapel and meeting room. Let us abandon this mantle of orphan, back to the heaths and the marshes and the hills, back to the woods and the glades of night, back to the old gods and the ruddy lips of Pan, till the glades thrill as with the music of syrinx and sistrum, which are pipes, and our souls are rent asunder under the on the flaming horns of Pan. That's Pan the pipe out of the forest. He's the theme, he's the chief character in the song, Stairway to Heaven.
And, of course, the piper is really the devil, isn't it, Lucifer?
Exactly. Book of Ezekiel, chapter 28, explains that Jesus created Lucifer as the celestial composer of music with celestial pipes and tambourines.
And I think that's so important. You have to understand that Lucifer was an expert on music. He knew how to use music to gain the souls of mankind. And when we see the devil's music coming into our Christian churches, you should be there pointing this out to the leadership of the church. You need to get them to read this book. Really, this is a very important book. You need to get them to see the video that we carry. They sold their souls for rock and roll, because believe me, it's not simply at the rock concerts anymore. It's in the major churches of America. Let's go to Will, who's calling from Missouri. Hi, Will. Does he have a question?
Yes, I do, Dr. Stan. Thank you for taking my call. And your guest, Thomas.
Yes.
The musical muse that we talk about, or that the people that play music refer to, that little fellow that sits on your shoulder and gives you this music, are there good and evil muses in your imagination, or is there anything in your research that would distinguish that?
Well, I'm not a musician myself, but I can tell you that if the Lord wants to inspire a Christian musician and put thoughts in his head about certain music and encourage him to come up with a song, God can do whatever he wants in the mind of Christian people. We know that secular rock stars aren't going to produce good godly music. If the Lord wants to help a godly musician produce godly music, he can do that. However, you know a tree by its fruit. And Jimmy Page and Robert Plant have followed the teachings of Crowley and presented themselves as musical mediums. And what the music does and the impact that it has should tell you what its fruit is. I mean, how many people I've heard since the Amy Grant thing in the mid-80s, when she was telling everybody she was sunbathing in her backyard with Rolling Stone magazine and wearing leopard skin shirts on stage, and, you know, saying sex is great and you don't have to be ashamed. All this stuff was legitimizing the secular rock culture in the eyes of young Christian people in the church. They weren't drawing the unbelievers to Christ. They were legitimizing the ungodly rock music in the eyes of the young people. That's why it's permeated our church today. The demons can give any type of music they want to people who sell their souls. You have Jimmy Page, Robert Plant both saying they're musical mediums. Robert Plant said he wrote the first lyrics of Stairway to Heaven and he had no idea what he was writing and he almost jumped out of his seat. These are all in line with the writings of Crowley, saying that anybody who gives themselves over to Lucifer we'll get music in return.
Okay, we're going to have to go to a break. Will, do you want to hang on until after the break or not?
Yes, I would, please.
All right, hang on here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Thomas Friend, and we've been talking about the Highway to the Stairway to Heaven, of course, one of the most popular of all songs of all time. And it was really, of course, channeled through Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. And we, not simply this one group, but this is what the subject of this group, the subject of the Led Zeppelins. They were actually channeling demonic music. Now, can we have music that is inspired by God? Yes, certainly Handel's Messiah, some of the great hymns of the past, I think are truly inspired by God. So here within the musical industry is a battlefield for the hearts and souls of men. And I believe that good music can draw people to God. And, of course, help in worship. I think evil music can draw people to Satan. And, of course, draw them away from God. Now, Will, did you have another comment?
Well, yes, I did. Simply because I have spent many years of my life, most of my life, playing music. And a great number of the songs that I've come up with, well, not a great number, I would say probably about a 10% range, come out of nowhere. And I have to either stay up endlessly and either write it out or memorize it or get it down, or it's so fleeting that it's absolutely gone. And some of it is quite nice. People do seem to enjoy it. And then sometimes it is really weird. And I just was wondering whether there was this good muse, bad muse thing. And
all right. Well, let's ask Thomas, how would you respond to Will? Some of it, sometimes he gets really weird music. Other times, well, it seems to be pretty good music. Will, are you a born-again Christian?
In some regards, I am, and in some regards, I'm not. I've been studying for many years, and so I have a great trouble with my faith when I get involved in deep history and comparative religion. But I have a deep feeling in my heart, and follow the Christian faith almost exclusively.
But you really you got a lot of doubts then in your heart about whether it's really accurate or not. You don't necessarily believe in the inerrancy of the Scriptures.
That's correct.
Okay.
Not a fundamentalist believer.
All right, fine. How would you then respond, Tom, to what Will is saying? He gets some of the really weird music. It sort of comes out of nowhere. It's almost like it's. Like somebody's giving him this message. What would you say to him?
Well, I would say, honestly, that it sounds like the fruit of what Aleister Crowley said. He said that anybody, and I'm not accusing you of this, Will, but he said anybody who got into Lucifer would hear music right out of nowhere if they were a musician. Now, not being a believer in Christ, this is how people are drawn into the supernatural. It's not like Jimmy Page was born and he walked out of the womb saying, I'm going to become a magician and a musical medium. The spirits at times will go...
Well, let's off for just a moment here. Okay, this is Dr. Stan. And, of course, our guest this evening is Thomas Friend. We have Will calling from Missouri. And Will is not... He, of course, has studied comparative religions. He has a lot of questions about Christianity. He doesn't consider himself a born-again Christian or necessarily a fundamental Christian. And he gets this this source of music that sort of comes, and some of it's really pretty weird. Others, music some people like, but some of it he's a little concerned that this might be coming from a bad source because it's very weird music. And Thomas, who's studied this sort of thing and has been deeply involved with the cult music and finally came to become, I would assume, an evangelical Christian, is responding to the question from Will. You know, Will wants to know where these ideas are coming from. So pick up that idea, Thomas, because we now have all of our stations back on board.
Well, he mentioned that some of it was weird music that he felt came right out of nowhere.
Well, no. Can I interject?
Sure, go ahead. Sure.
Let's define weird.
Well, that was your word.
Yes, I know, but let's define it now because it's getting to be used over and over again. There's some of the music that is so complex that it is almost, it's way beyond ability, all right, and my ability.
All right, fine.
So then sometimes the music is very discordant, and that's what I mean by weird. It's like if it wasn't for the beat and the unusual chord structures and the unusual scales, it would not be something that someone would just sit down and compose.
All right, now, where do you think it comes from, Will? Since you say that this really would not be something that you would personally be able to write, certainly it's not something that you're doing. It's coming to you out of almost out of nowhere. Where do you think it's coming from? Do you think it's coming from the God who created the heavens and the earth, or do you think it might be coming from another source?
That is the question. Is there a good muse and a bad muse, or a good muse and an evil muse
answer that.
Yes, that's what the question is.
Okay, fine. So go ahead, Thomas.
When the music is transformed from a melody to a hypnotic tone, that we're going from melody to hypnosis. Let me quote Jimi Hendrix for you. In 1969, in Life magazine, Jimi Hendrix said, quote, "Atmospheres are going to come through music because music is a spiritual thing of its own. You can hypnotize people with music, and when you get people at their weakest point, you can preach into their subconscious whatever you want to say." Notice he used the word preach. These people are all preachers, but they're doing it through the music. Now, let me ask you, Will, were you under any marijuana or cocaine, any kind of drug use while this was taking place and you were doing your music?
No, I don't do drugs.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is, if you don't believe that you were composing this, that it was coming out of nowhere, and if you believe it was hypnotic and it was rock and roll and it was coming out of nowhere, I would say to you that someone from the other side, a musical spirit, was trying to impress upon you the fact that you can get music from the spirit world. That's exactly how people are drawn in. Aleister Crowley was drawn in that way. Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, Mick Jagger. I mean, Keith Richards said in 1977 that the Rolling Stones songs would come to them en masse in the recording studio.
Yes,
they were only channeling the music.
But you can say the same thing about Bach or Beethoven or anybody else, because I'm sure that when you get into the higher levels, if you sit down to compose music, in my experience, and you start off with a theme, you can mathematically and figuratively chart out a piece of music, but if it's coming from your heart or coming from your feelings, which is usually the best product, like a painter, it's going to produce, and you are in some regards a channel. You're a doorway between the different spectrums, I guess, of existence.
And there are two spectrums out there.
Yes.
There's Satan's and there's God's, and you're going to have to choose which one you're going to, which one you are going to live by. Have you actually had a chance to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness?
No, I haven't yet, Dr.
Well, can I suggest that you do that? And you know, I hope that you'll understand the true nature of the spiritual battle we're involved in, and one of these days, you're going to have to make your decision which side you're on. Now, you know, I've got all sorts of degrees and diabetic Kappa keys and all of these things, but in the final analysis, accepting Christianity is a step of faith, and I've never regretted I took that step, but I had to do that, and well, I hope maybe you just keep on listening to our programs, and one day you may finally take that step as well. Sometimes we get too much education and we get too much comparative religion, and I think one of the greatest dangers to modern society is higher education. I really do.
Ever learning and ever coming to the knowledge of the truth. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Uh-huh. Ever learning but never coming to the knowledge of the truth. In fact, today I really feel that there is so much false knowledge that's coming out of our... in fact, you know, you go back and you read the story of the serpent, and what was the Eve to do? Well, we see he was to eat of the fruit of the tree, and she would become as God, and she would know good and evil. And it was this knowledge of good and evil that would make her become a God. And that's really the what we're told, you know. It's the knowledge sometimes that can lead us away from God. So, anyway, what are your thoughts on that, Tom? And then we'll get back, of course, to discussion of your book.
Well, with Will, I would say that he needs to understand what the Bible says in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 14, that Satan himself was transformed into an angel of light. And that quote that's referring to him becoming a messenger of truth, that he appears as though he's a messenger of truth, but that's just a deception. And with this music, it may have come to him in very beautiful music, but as he said, he struggles with his belief in Christianity. He doesn't claim to be a born-again believer. and here he has music coming to him from out of nowhere. We must remember, there's not a more beautiful song in the rock world than Stairway to Heaven. And Jimmy Page and Robert Plant yield their credit to Lucifer for that. So because something comes across as very complex and beautiful doesn't mean it's coming from God, especially if the person who's composing the music doesn't believe in Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior.
And I really think that does the music honor God? I mean, you listen to the great hymns, they do honor God. And then you hear this other music, they dishonor God. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, you know, I think that it is the fear of the God that is really the beginning of all wisdom. We go to a church, and the minister there is really very, very young. But I marvel at how wise he is. Now, he's not, of course, preaching his own ideas of what the world is about. He's preaching the Word of God, and in God's Word is the center of wisdom. And, you know, if people don't understand that there has to be something higher than themselves that they have to turn to, and you're going to have to turn to one source or another. You're either going to have to turn to the Lord of the God of the Bible, or you're going to have to turn to the Lord of the underworld, and you'll get great prosperity, and you'll have all sorts of pleasure here in this world, but we're all going to live throughout all eternity. The only question is, where are we going to live? I've made my choice. I'm sure Tom has made his choice. I think anybody out there in the listening audience can make their choice. But one day they're going to have to decide. Well, we've got Mike back again. Wait a minute. We got Mike from Santa Cruz again. So let's go to Mike from... We got Matt from Michigan. So let's take Matt from Michigan. Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
Dan. Growing up in my secular days, I marveled at the lyrics and the melodies of the Beatles. And I wondered at the time that John Lennon made the statement that something about Jesus Christ, that they were more popular than Jesus Christ. And he gave some extrapolated explanation on that.
He said that Christianity would fade away right after he said that. He said, Christianity will fade away and I will be proven right.
Is that right?
That's what he said.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, he's dead and Christ is still alive. So that sort of puts a lie to what he said. But, as you know, the Beatles were deeply involved in the occult.
If you go to AV1611.org on the Internet, it's got a whole website there about the Beatles and what he said about Christianity. That's AV as in Victor, 1611.org.
Let's let Matt say it, because I think he really wanted to tell us something, because obviously he was quite intrigued with the Beatles when he was young.
Well, indeed. It was a source of enjoyment, and it really drew me into joining church choirs, because I wanted to sing, and here I was singing Beatles tunes. But Why was John Lennon murdered? It seemed like he was murdered out of the blue. And the same with, George Harrison wasn't actually murdered, but there was an attempt a few years back where some assassin or whatever had infiltrated the secured premises he was at in England. I was just curious if you had anything to say about that.
Do you have anything to say about that, Thomas?
Well, from everything that I heard about Stephen, I guess his last name is Chapman, I don't remember exactly what his name was. He was just very unstable, and his mind was open to being manipulated by Satan for evil. I mean, he was really out of it, this individual. And people who are mentally unstable like that and psychologically he's not grounded. This guy was way out there. He thought that he was accomplishing something. There was a thing on the Biography Channel about it, but Satan is the murderer. Jesus said, you know, Satan is the murderer, and he will kill, and that's who this guy was controlled by. It's just that simple. As far as all the details, I don't know. People go after famous people all the time.
Matt, if you haven't yet seen the video, they sold their souls for rock and roll. There's a 4-hour version, there's a 10-hour version. But you'll actually see one of the people there who worked with these rock stars saying, you know, they're all dead. They're all dying off. And they're all dying off. So, yeah, what's happening? Why is this happening? And then you'll actually hear one of the rock stars saying, we consciously, intentionally sold our souls to the devil. Trouble is that the devil actually comes and he fulfills the contract. You sell your soul to the devil, and he'll take you whenever he wants to. And I believe he's claiming an awful lot of these so popular, so wealthy, so rich rock stars to spend eternity with him.
That was Pete Townsend that asked that question.
Right.
Famous guitarist of The Who.
Right.
Why are all my friends dying so young?
Right. He didn't understand that, huh?
He didn't understand it. And the thing is that they're probably, you know, unless you have had an opportunity to look into this and study it, unless you've studied the occult writings, which I have, I mean, it seems so absurd that there could be this literally millions of people in America pushing world government, pushing this type of music, pushing socialism, trying to destroy this country, doing everything they can to create disease and to confuse the American people. Doesn't make sense.
Dr. Stan, is the thrust of all of this seemingly benign entertainment in the rock and roll industry, and one of, even today, I would be tempted to listen to Paul McCartney, and I don't know if they collectively or individually consummated contracts with Lucifer, but...
Four poor boys from Liverpool are world famous overnight with multitudes of beautiful songs, and then condemning Christianity.
Oh, they did condemn Christianity.
Oh, sure they did.
Yeah. So, but that tells you where the fruit is. And they had Aleister Crowley on the front of the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Did they really?
This is one of Aleister Crowley. Yeah, he's all the way in the back row, the second face from the left. And this is what Crowley taught his followers about his vision of Lucifer when he was worshiping him. Quote, "And now there comes an angel to hide the tablet with his mighty wing. This angel has all the colors mingled in his dress. His head is proud and beautiful. His headdress is of silver and red and blue and gold and black, like cascades of water. And in his left hand he has a panpipe of the seven holy metals upon which he plays. I cannot tell you how wonderful the music is, but it is so wonderful that it one only lives in one's ears. One cannot see anything anymore." Now, another book called Pacts with the Devil, another occultist wrote this. He wrote, quote, "Thanks once again to remarks by Aleister Crowley, many people, especially neo-pagans, assert that the devil is simply Pan, the piper, the god of the forest. They say that the early Christians took this friendly forest god with his pipes and perpetual sexual expletive, meaning erection, and turned him into the devil. They go further and state that there is no devil, that he is purely a Christian invention." So neo-pagans will tell you that the devil is just Pan and that there is no real devil, that the Christians created him.
Yeah.
Aleister Crowley promoted Pan, his followers promote Pan, and Pan the Piper, the god of the forest, is the chief character of Stairway to Heaven. And he said you will be born again. Robert Plant said you will be born again. Aleister Crowley called the word reason. He said it meant absolute truth. Now listen to this verse and then I'll let you comment. He said, Robert Plant sang, "And it's whispered that soon if we all call the tune is the music's hidden message, then the piper will lead us to reason, which is absolute truth. And a new day will dawn for those who stand long in the forest will echo with laughter." There's Pan the Piper, the god of the forest, leading people into the domain of reason, which Aleister Crowley and Eliphas Levi before him said was absolute truth. That song is about born-again Satanism.
You know what?
And Aleister Crowley promoted it, and all of his followers, including the Beatles, had him on their front of their album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Okay, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, and I recall Paul McCartney making a statement in response to, where do these lyrics come from in these tunes? And he says, well, I just sit down when I feel a thought coming, sits down on his piano and he starts playing away, and I thought, yeah, I guess that's possible, you know, the creative writers, etc. Maybe, you know, I remember in high school, in college, the creative writing classes, and but it never flowed like that. And of course, I'm beginning to understand that the thrust of all this is to either drive a wedge between the children and the parents. Because the music is I honestly remember it seemed to have put me into my own little fantasy world,
right.
That was just totally opposite of what the family unit was all about.
And they're still doing that. Go ahead, Tom.
May I quote the manager of the Beatles for you, Mike?
Certainly.
He says, "I cannot believe how antichrist these people are."
Wow.
He says, "Don't misunderstand me. I'm antichrist as well. But they're so antichrist that it shocks me." Now, that's a quote from the Beatles manager. Now, listen.
Wow.
If this guy's getting inspiration to sit down at a piano, and his manager says he's a hardcore antichrist in his behavior, and he's getting inspiration for beautiful music out of nowhere, and he's an antichrist, that'll tell you where the music is coming from.
Matt, I'd suggest you get Thomas's book. We do carry that, and then this video, they sold their souls for rock and roll. The two of them together, they supplement one another so greatly, so great. The book gives you the documentation, and of course the video you'll actually hear Marilyn Manson and Ozzy Osbourne and the others singing about Mr. Crowley. You know who Mr. Crowley is? That's Aleister Crowley. He's the guy who's on the cover of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart album. Okay,
yep.
Thanks so much for calling. And let's go right now to Carol, because we're running out of time. Carol in Oklahoma. Hi, Carol. How are you doing?
Hi. Good evening, Dr. Stan and your guest. I wanted to comment on a couple of things that have been mentioned. You know, Charlie Manson, the murderer, says that he is Satan and receives the spirit of Satan. Well, he also wrote music. And actually, you know, he wrote music and gave it to the Beach Boys. And when he went and killed Sharon Tate, that house actually had been rented out by, I think, Marty Melcher.
Terry
Melcher. And he really thought, I think, that he was going to the house of one of the Beach Boys. He was wanting to get even with him because he didn't use his music or something. Anyway, he was mad at him.
Sure, but of course, Manson was a Satanist. He was associated with a group called The Process, same one that David Berkovitz was in. And of course, it was the Son of Sam murderers. They're all there. You're not hearing about this in the regular media. The police covered up the Son of Sam murders. They arrested one man. They let the rest of them get away. Why? Well, if you haven't read the book, The Ultimate Evil by Maury Torrey, you need to get it. But this is simply another source of information. You're absolutely right. The Manson was energized by evil. He was a Satanist.
He still says he writes music.
He gets this music, and some of it isn't too bad if you don't like demonic music.
Yeah, and the other comment I wanted to make was Dr. John Coleman says that the Beatles were created by the Tavistock Institute, which is, of course, a psychological group to mind control masses of people, and their target was the youth of America, and it was to bring youth down morally, and that's why they were sent here. And John Lennon's father was high up in some of that stuff over there.
That's fine, but I think it is all satanic, Carol. I really do. Hey,
yeah.
We're out of time.
Well, I wanted to say that young man should get that book, A Crisis in Christian Music by Dr. Jack Wheaton. It will enlighten him a whole lot about the rhythms and where they come from.
Crisis in Christian Music. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we actually carry that one as well.
Yes,
thanks so much, Carol. God bless.
Yes.
And let's go to Andrew from Watsonville. Andrew, we're just about out of time. I guess we lost Andrew. Anyway, we're going to have to let Tom go. Tom, do you have a parting thought? It's been a fascinating hour. Really enjoyed this program. I hope you have as well.
I always do, Dr. Stan. I thank you for having me on. And I just want to say to anyone who's listening that they will be encouraged and definitely challenged by reading my book and intellectually stimulated. There's so many things in here in 650 pages that it would take me all day to explain.
It's a great book. It really, you did a great job on that. I'm really very impressed by it, which is why we want to carry it and get it out.
Well, thank you very much, sir.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so much, and we'll look forward to having you on again one of these days.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, of course, that was Thomas Friend. His book is The Fallen Angel. Fallen Angel. And we carry that book. We carry the book that Carol was just talking about, The Crisis in Christian Music by Dr. Jack Wheaton. We even have a 4-tape set on musical madness. But I think that probably one of the best things we have going along with Thomas's book is the 4 or the 10 hour video. They sold their souls for rock and roll. And if you read Thomas's book, and then you actually see these rock stars, obviously under demonic influence, they really are, and they admit they're under demonic influence. They admit they hate Christianity. They admit that they're disciples of Aleister Crowley. And you must understand that there is a world satanic conspiracy, and nobody wants to talk about it. I don't know whether they're afraid to, or maybe they don't know about it. But this is the foundation of everything that's going on. This is why they are taking a God and prayer out of our schools, and the Ten Commandments out of public institutions, and the cross off the seal of the city of Los Angeles. There is an anti-Christian conspiracy, and you need to understand this, and you need to help us get the information out. That's why I do what I do 5 hours a day, trying to call the people of this country to repentance and to return to God. So if you believe that there really is a problem today, if you believe we're involved in a spiritual battle, and of course being fought on a military battlefield today, upon a cultural battlefield, an ideological battlefield, why we hope many of you will decide you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out 5 hours a day. You can go to our website, and of course you can listen on the internet to our programs 5 hours a day and not get anything accomplished. You can listen to a radio program somewhere in America 5 hours a day. You'll hear our programs. Of course, we even do a Saturday program that's heard, I think, on 35 stations now. We have programs on the shortwave 4 hours a day. And incidentally, they keep changing our frequency, but our afternoon program is 9.430. That's 6 to 8 Eastern Time, 3 to 5 Western Time. And then our evening program, 8 to 10 Western, and of course 11 to 1 Eastern Time, is on 7.315. But they're good stations, and they're reaching into Europe, and people there are hearing a message that they've never heard before, because Europe has completely abandoned God, and maybe we can help to bring some of them back again. But quite frankly, we need your help. If you believe in our message, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, our May-June newsletter, tells you who Osama bin Laden is. Our July newsletter, which hopefully will be going out in a few days, tells you what really happened on the morning of September 11th. The message you're not going to get any place. It tells you about the smoking gun that came from the 9/11 Commission hearings, that the 9/11 Commission just forgot to put into their report. I wonder why that was. Well, maybe it was just a mistake. They forgot to include the smoking gun. Well, we, of course, we want to remind you, we are going to be having a meeting, an all-day-long meeting here on the 6th of November. We're going to have Joe Schimmel here, Pastor Joe Schimmel, who, of course, started out as a writer and was demonically possessed. And he is the one, of course, who put together the videos on the Sorcerers of the New Age. And, of course, his video, the 4 or 10 hour version, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. We recommend you remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, I guess, no, it'll be Thursday now. There'll be another program. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have a gentleman with us this evening. His name is Craig Smith, and he's going to talk about the terror threats. You know, it is interesting that just 3 months before the election, they suddenly found there's going to be an attack on the financial infrastructure of the United States that, well, of course, this material they've had around for 3 years, but it's just coincidental they're just bringing this up at this time. And anybody who thinks they're bringing this up to rally support behind the current administration or to frighten the American people obviously is a paranoid schizophrenic who believes in black helicopters, believe there was a conspiracy behind the assassination of John Kennedy, and probably believes in UFOs. So anybody who believes that this is, they're playing games with our mind, obviously, is paranoid and schizophrenic. And, well, of course, but there really are problems, very real problems facing our society. We do have a rising price of oil. We have a shrinking economy, and faced with a shrinking economy, why the Fed is being forced to raise the interest rates, of which, of course, will even shrink the economy even further. And we've got lots of real problems in America. And Craig talks on all of these things. Hi, Craig. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, good to be with you, Dr. Stan. Last time I spoke to you was some 15 years ago in Washington, D.C., where we were both at a conference, and at least I believe it was Washington, D.C., and so it's been quite a few years.
It really has been. Well, what was the conference about, do you recall?
You know, I really don't. I want to say that it was a National Booksellers Convention or a Christian Booksellers Convention or a Patriot rally of some sort. Maybe I remember interviewing Oliver North at the time. Matter of fact, I think you interviewed him at the same time, if I remember correctly.
Could very well have been. Well, why don't, anyway, because you've been busy, I understand that you're doing a lot of radio and television, trying to let the American people know that we've got some real problems here that are really not being addressed, and I don't think either political party is addressing the real issue facing America today.
Well, I think you're correct, Doc. I told your producer I started radio shows at 4 o'clock this morning. I was on Fox News Live at 8 o'clock. This is the 16th radio and television interview I've done today, so if I sound a bit weary, it's only because I am. But I'm not growing weary with the fact that finally America is starting to waken up to some of the potential problems that we have and the true threats, the true threats that Al-Qaeda really present to this country, because now that it's come forward with this information that's been out there for 3 years, and I might add one of the reasons it didn't come forward quicker, Doc, is the fact that they wanted to make sure that there were multiple sourcings for this, and they wanted to make sure that there was specificity of the information. So while it has been out there for 3 years, there was some new information that came in January, and over the last couple weeks that information was verified that then let Tom Ridge go public. But that being said, Al-Qaeda is clearly focused on disrupting and or really hurting us financially. We're concerned about bioterror attacks, nuclear attacks, chemical attacks, but very few people are concerned about a financial attack. And a financial attack is coming. There's a good chance it could cause a very deep recession. And with Mr. Greenspan having interest rates at 45-year lows, he has virtually nowhere to go to pump up this false money system to bring us back out of a recession or a slowdown. So I think a lot of worlds are starting to converge at one zenith here, and it could get rather messy over the next couple of years.
Somebody's referred to it as the perfect financial storm, and I think you're absolutely right. If you read some of the writings of Osama bin Laden, He talks about how vulnerable our economic structure is. And the best way to destroy America is economically, not with nuclear attacks, not with biological or chemical attacks, but attacks the financial infrastructure of our nation. And most Americans have no idea that we are sitting on a house of cards, and of course the hurricane is coming. And we have a monetary system similar to those that have failed all throughout the world going back for hundreds and hundreds of years. In fact, they've tried this same thing down through the ages, even when we still had gold currency, why they tried clipping the coins and doing everything to expand the amount of money to artificially inflate the money supply to create prosperity. And, of course, once they began to learn how to print paper money, why the Chinese did that. And but eventually, of course, we've seen time and again, they printed paper money and simply put so much money out there. And initially, it produces great prosperity. And I think it's amazing what they were able to accomplish here in the United States and really even throughout the world over the last 90 years. But the problem is that they were totally reliant upon Alan Greenspan to keep this economy together, and I don't see how he can possibly do that. As you point out, what can he do? Can he keep the interest rates low? No. Can he raise the interest rates? If he does that, he endangers simply crumbling our economy, destroying the mild recovery that we have. If he doesn't raise the interest rates, why, he's going to lose the dollar. We're going to have rampant inflation. So what's going to happen? How do you see it playing out, Craig?
Well, as you said, Doc, this is not a new scenario. Lenin understood this. Stalin understood this. Many of the dictators and fascists throughout the years have understood that the best way to undermine a society is to debauch their currency. And Osama bin Laden is not alone in his thinking. It was rather surprising to me when I saw the quotes from the Al Jazeera website from Osama bin Laden and his discussions about America's vulnerabilities financially on the Fox News network the other day. And then I saw it on the Chris Matthews program with Hardball. So all of a sudden you're starting to see these things that many of us have known about for years starting to go mainstream. And I think the reason for that is because I think the media complex now realizes that there is chaos on its way, and they can't be caught with a situation where they can't say they didn't tell us so. Let's take a trip through history, if we could, for just a minute, Doctor, to have people understand why Osama bin Laden is coming from where he's coming from. 700 AD, Islam was formed. When it was formed on five pillars. One of those five pillars was referred to as the zakat, or charity, or money, and that tied into the phulos, which were the promises to pay, and it'd take too long to get into that with an hour-long program, but suffice to say that the zakat came in the form of what was referred to as a gold dinar. And from 700 AD till 1924, when the Ottoman Empire fell, the gold dinar was the coin of the realm and was the only acceptable currency amongst believers of Islam, because it tied into scripture from their Quran that told them that this is how they were to run their money system. We saw something very similar happen in the early 70s when the Shah was deposed. One of the first reasons that they deposed the Shah was because he abandoned the gold Pahlavi for the U.S. dollar, and that signaled to the radicals that the Shah was actually turning Western and becoming sympathetic towards Israel, and therefore must be destroyed. But nevertheless, in 1924, the Islamic world embraced the U.S. dollar as their modern currency. They realized that embracing that currency, not only did they get the U.S. dollar, but they also got some traits of the Western world that they weren't too crazy about. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, if you will, Doctor. Along with pornography and many of the other things that they tag us with the line, the great Satan of. September, 1993, Osama bin Laden tries to bring down the World Trade Centers, which is the heart and soul of American finance. He fails. He reattempts September 11, 2001. He succeeds. Wall Street is closed for 6 days. The markets are in chaos. When the markets start to reopen, they're down several hundred points. There's $1 trillion worth of value lost in the market. Next thing you know, a $3.5 billion budget deficit becomes a $500 billion budget deficit. 3 years later, the U.S. dollar is down 40% in value. Gold goes from $280 to $400, oil from $33 a barrel to $46 a barrel. But something very interesting happened 60 days after September 11th that the news media did not pick up on. The Royal West Malaysian Mint, in cooperation with the Islamic Development Bank, along with 53 member nations of the Organization of Islamic States, issued the new gold dinar, a 4.5-gram coin made out of 22-karat gold that now becomes their currency. Boom, all of a sudden you hear Mahathir Mohamad, the former prime minister of Malaysia, come forward and say to the oil businessmen, gentlemen, you're being ripped off by trading your oil for U.S. dollars. U.S. dollars are depreciating. Therefore, I call upon you and 1.5 billion Muslims to abandon the U.S. dollar and turn to the gold dinar. That's why what you see happening right now, Doctor, as it relates to the attacks on financial centers in America, that will soon happen. Those are not just threats. They will occur, sir. That what Osama bin Laden believes is going to happen is the world, once the dollar gets into a chaotic state, will turn to the gold dinar, which is 100% backed by gold, looking for stability. Well, I think he'll fail, but I don't think he's not going to create a lot of havoc in the process. By the time he's finished, the financial wake that he will leave will be devastating to the United States, and I think it'd take anywhere from 5 to 10 years to recover from. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch of what this very diabolical and evil man, yet very articulate man, has in mind. He also wishes to see America leave the Middle East. He wants to gain control of 75% of the world oil by taking over Saudi Arabia and the regions of Iran, Iraq, Syria, Jordan, etc. And then he wants to ultimately move on Pakistan, overthrow Musharraf, take the control of the weapons of mass destruction, along with the chemical, biological, and nuclear capabilities that Pakistan has, and turn his full targets on the nation of Israel. Once again, Doctor, I don't believe he'll succeed, but the chaos that he'll cause in the process is going to be devastating, and I hope your listeners take the time to stay tuned to programs like yours so that they can be informed as the events unfold, because they won't be surprises. They're rather predictable at this stage of the game.
And not only that, I think everything you say I agree with in theory, but interestingly enough, I was talking to a man from England today. We had him as a guest on our afternoon program, and he was talking about the increasing anti-American bias or almost hatred within England, within Europe, not for the American people, but for our government and our government policies. And we're talking about France and Germany and so many of the countries of Europe. I mean, I'm talking about the people of the country, not necessarily the governments that we buy off with bribes to their politicians. But the people are turning against America, and of course they have a currency, they call it the euro, which is, although not 100% gold backing, is at least 15% gold back, so that they can't inflate the currency. It has an element of at least a semblance of a security for their currency,
right.
Whereas there's absolutely nothing behind our currency other than the integrity of the American government, and even most people in America know that our government doesn't tell the truth. And when they get into a bad situation, they simply print more money, and they've been doing this. And the unfortunate thing is, if you look at the speed with which they're increasing the amount of money in circulation and the various increments of money, we're in an inflationary spiral, and I don't think they're telling the truth about the degree of inflation. Do you?
Well, Dr. Stan, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and let me tell you, it's a fascinating footnote. I guess it was about 8 years ago, almost 9 years ago now, I wrote in my newsletter, Real Money Perspectives, that one day we would see the euro gain parity with the U.S. dollar. At the time that I wrote that, I got letters back from economists that I'm friends with throughout the country, basically saying to me, you have just totally discredited yourself, made a fool of yourself, you know these theories are ridiculous, and I was shunned by the community that I was becoming friendly with, and thank God I was shunned by them. I met a lot of them at the Ronald Reagan International Center for Trade in Washington, D.C. But not only did the prediction come true that that the dollar has parity with the euro, as you stated, the euro is now considerably more valuable than the dollar, and the world has turned to the euro. Most of the oil trading, and most Americans are unaware of this, most of the oil trading that goes on overseas is done in euro right now because of the 15% gold backing, knowing that they cannot inflate that currency, or at least they can restrict the rate of inflation on the euro. And, you know, the more I think about this whole subject, Dr. Stan, I've got to tell you that I thought for many years, and even as recently as the last couple weeks, that the gold dinar will never triumph over the U.S. dollar. But I must tell you that over the last couple weeks, I've started to change my thinking. And if the world's in total chaos and nobody can establish value because the U.S. dollar has no real value, unless God keeps growing trees and we can keep creating ink, we can't make money. I have a feeling that the world, and I'm not talking about America right now, because we hate what's happening and we won't embrace a currency that's made by our enemies, but I think the rest of the world may do so. I think you may see the European common markets adopt the gold dinar. Clearly, 1.5 million Muslims, I still think of the hatred that the Muslim world has towards America for the 1997 currency crisis, in which millions, hundreds of millions of Muslims lost their entire life savings. And don't you find it rather ironic, or maybe even sinister in nature, Dr. Stan, that while hundreds of millions of Muslims lost their life savings, a gentleman by the name of George Soros, a very famous international financier, made $1 billion in a 24-hour trading period, trading those currencies.
Well, tell me about the 1997 crisis, because I don't know that much about it, and I suspect a lot of our listeners don't. What happened in 1997?
Well, the 1997 Asian currency crisis, in a nutshell, was we had a company called Long-Term Credit Management.
Okay, right.
LCTM. They had extended loans to Asian banks. Asian banks were overextended. The United States basically called the markers. Which is interesting because John Corzine, who's now the senator in New Jersey, had a big part to play in that whole mess. Goldman Sachs was involved. And suffice to say that the net result was hundreds of billions of dollars were lost by Muslims in the Asian countries. See, we think of Muslims only being in the Middle East. The Muslims are all over the Philippines. They're all over, as you know, the Far East. They're in Asian countries. There's a lot of Muslim population throughout the rest of the world, in South America, Africa, etc. And it had such a tremendous impact on Asian countries that it trickled down into the Muslim communities. They still, to this day, Doc, hate our guts for that.
Now, basically what happened, did their banks collapse as a result of this?
In essence, I mean, there wasn't a total failure because the United States came in and bailed out Long-Term Credit Management. And so ultimately everything survived, but there was a revaluation, if you will, of the rupiah and many of the currencies. And quite similar to what happens in the New York Stock Exchange. I mean, look at NASDAQ. We had the bubble of the 90s. NASDAQ was 5,500. One day, or whatever it was, a couple weeks later, it was 1,500, and, you know, $4 trillion of wealth evaporated.
And, of course, that's very, very similar to what happened in Argentina about two and a half years ago. I saw an ad in the Wall Street Journal the other day. It was actually run, I don't know who ran it, but it had the Uruguayan, the finance minister and the finance minister of Brazil, and they were talking about Argentina, and don't pick on them, help them, you know, because in Argentina, over 50% of the population are living below the poverty line, 15% unemployment, but because they simply wrote off all their debts and stole all the money from the middle class, because they were simply had this massive debt, there was nothing else they could do to value the currency, destroy the savings of the middle class, wipe them out, but now their economy is beginning to grow again, and the play is, well, don't insist they pay back the $100 billion that they loaned from the people of Europe, and the retirees over there, simply let them give back a few cents on the dollar and start in all over again. Could that happen in America?
I think it could easily happen in America, Dr. Stan, and I think there maybe not only could it happen, but it more than likely will happen.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a few minutes with Craig Smith, and he has a tremendous grasp of what's going on. I've heard of Craig, of course, since we met many years ago. We'll be back here in just a moment, and of course, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Craig Smith. And what people do not understand is we're borrowing just to keep afloat, and we're borrowing not from the American people, but from foreign countries, about $1.2 or $1.3 million every minute, $1.6 to $1.7 billion every day from foreign countries. The only way that we could possibly meet the massive deficits that we have, because government doesn't have any money, it's got to either tax the people and get it, but we cut taxes. It's got to, of course, print the money, and that it creates inflation and destroys the value of the currency, and then nobody wants it. Or they borrow, and so that's what they're doing. They're borrowing massive amounts from other countries. They always used to say, a debt doesn't really matter because we owe it to ourselves. And that used to be true. Well, I don't think it was ever valid, but, you know, that was what they said. But we no longer owe the debt to ourselves. We owe a lot of our debt to foreign countries. Isn't that true, Craig?
Yes, of course, we did it through the wonderful instrument of treasury bills that go on to an auction that are now sold to foreign entities. There's well over $1 trillion worth of U.S. notes that are held by foreign entities at this particular stage of the game, and that's why during the, and we were talking about this before the break, before the Asian currency crisis, and again, the Asian currency crisis, basically, Doctor, it was the hedge funds of long-term credit management that got the Asian currencies in trouble. And I misspoke. I talked about the rupiah. It was actually the Malaysian ringgit and the basket of Asian currencies that took the biggest hit. But right after that is when the plans went into play to develop the gold dinar so that there could never be another nation again that could devalue their currency and steal from the middle class and the poverty populations of these nations. And it's interesting. I pulled up a quote that I thought was very interesting on the quick break we had there. It says, his name was Iman, and of course an Iman isn't a religious leader. That's kind of like saying pastor in the Islamic world. Iman Ahmed Ibn Handel. And he said right after the currency crisis, he heard the messenger of Allah say, a time is certainly coming over all of mankind in which there will be nothing left which will be of use save a dinar. And, you know, the whole concept of them having this gold dinar is to be able to play defense against America ever destroying their currencies again, which, as I said, put $1 billion in George Soros's pocket. Now, as it relates to this, we owe ourselves the money, so therefore there's no problem. Well, first off, we don't owe ourselves the money. We owe it to 12 Federal Reserve banks, which, as you know, Doctor, are not federal and have no reserves. So why we call them the Federal Reserves is nothing in my mind more than trying to fake out the public. But the Federal Reserve has this wonderful ability to hold treasury bill auctions where they sell American debt to foreign nations. And it's rather disturbing to me that we can have countries like China, Japan, and many of the other people that are maybe not so cordial to us, or I shouldn't say that. They're cordial to us as long as we buy their goods and sell them at Walmart, but if we stop doing that, they might become rather hostile, at which time if we owe them a lot of money, what is the golden rule, Dr. Stanley? He who owns the gold makes the rules?
Right.
And I think that we could find ourselves very quickly, instead of being the master, soon becoming the slave. And we can't even fathom that in the world that we live in America, because we say to ourselves...
Hold that thought right there. We've got to bring our other stations back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I guess this evening is Craig Smith, and we're really talking about what the history of the Malaysian currency crisis in 1997, when I think it was long-term capital hedge fund got into trouble, and George Soros, of course, was pulling some strings over there and collapsed their currency and really impoverished so many of the people throughout Malaysia and Indonesia. And that was shortly after that that they began to create the gold dinar to get back to the gold-backed currency. Instead of depending on the West and their fiat money system, which creates an artificial prosperity, but eventually the Islamic leaders realized that this was a violation of God's rule and was eventually going to lead to collapse and terrible suffering, then they began turning to something of intrinsic value as the basis of their money, which is really what our founding fathers said. Our founding fathers insisted that all of our currency related to gold and silver. Of course, that has been violated. The laws have been violated, like so many of the laws here in the United States. Congress is above the law, and so they allowed a group of privately owned central banks to take control of our monetary system. And of course, the Federal Reserve System was created not to benefit the American people. It was benefited to create the Central Bank of the United States, working in conjunction with the central banks of the world that have an agenda: a world feudalistic system under their control. And if you doubt that, you need to read Professor Carol Quigley's wonderful book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And Professor Quigley is certainly a world-acclaimed historian, the mentor of William Jefferson Clinton. And, of course, if you read page 324 of his book, he will tell you exactly what I said. So we've turned the control of our currency, of our destiny, over to a private group of international bankers who have a different agenda. They believe in a new world order and a new world religion. But unfortunately, we've lost control of our own destiny as a nation, haven't we, Craig?
Yes, there's no doubt about that. And you bring up a very intriguing point, Dr. Stan, and that is that America, from when we were formed, our Constitution called for a dollar to be a unit of measurement. It was a measurement of money. It was to be 24 and three-quarter grains of fine gold or 371 grains of fine silver. And as long as we stayed on that biblically mandated prescription that was outlined in our Constitution, our money system was the envy of the world. But we got off that money system in 1929 through 1933, and most people don't understand why we did. It wasn't just to give the power to the Federal Reserve. But you got to remember, we had a crash. And in order to print money back in 1929, you had to have gold reserves on hand. You couldn't just go out and print money like we do today. That's why, if you remember, during the 1929, there was a reference to cash was king. Well, the reason it was king was because you could convert it into gold. So Mr. Roosevelt recalled the gold at $20.67 an ounce. He put it into the treasuries. The Federal Reserve thus printed money against those reserves, but they did a little interesting arithmetic. They changed the official price from $20 to $35.
So that way they could really massively expand the money supply and create an artificial prosperity based upon the increased price of gold.
That's exactly correct. They created 75% more money than was currently in the system, which gave us the ability to come out of the Great Depression through the forces of money velocity.
And then, of course, we could finance the Second World War. We had to have that money.
Sure, and here's what's fascinating about it. Some could suggest, Dr. Stan, that we never came out of the Depression. We merely financed it, and soon the debt's going to come to play. Let me show you a beautiful illustration. Let's say Dr. Stan and Craig Smith are together, and we're absolutely broke, Doctor. We have zero money. But we have two credit cards. You have an American Express, and I have a Visa, okay? And you and I go out and we rent a limousine and we go out and have a big time on the town and we rent the presidential suites at the Hyatt and we go buy Rolex watches and fine suits, and for a week we live on those credit cards like absolute kings. Well, wouldn't it look to the world like we're the two most prosperous men in the nation?
Absolutely.
Oh, sure. But now what happens when the bill comes due? The credit card company shuts the credit card off. We can't afford to pay the bill. Everything gets confiscated and we become paupers. That's what's happening in America because the Federal Reserve System has a flaw. You see, if you start a money system with $1,000, and I hear the break, so feel free to shut me off here before the break, but if we start with $1,000 and we lend it out at 5%, people owe us $1,000 principal plus $50 interest. If we never create any more than $1,000, how can they ever pay us back? Well, they can't, so we have to create more. And that's been going on and on and on until we've inflated ourselves into oblivion.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a few moments with Craig Smith, and we'll invite your calls. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. You need to understand the monetary system to understand how we got to where we are and what lies ahead for America, unless, of course, the American people regain control of our government and return to a sound currency. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Craig Smith. And Craig, of course, was just talking about what happens after two fellas with credit cards go on a spending binge, and they just live it up, for a week, and they live, just like millionaires. And then, of course, the day comes when they no longer can borrow any money. And, of course, this is what's happening increasingly to America. Countries throughout the world are cutting back dramatically in lending money to the United States. What would you think would happen as far as our ability to raise money on international markets if we had a major financial crisis here in the United States and we had to devalue the dollar even more? Would countries be able willing to lend us money that we were going to pay them back with dollars that they knew were going to be depreciated by the time they got them? 5%, 20%, 30%, 40%? I mean, who in their right mind would lend us good money for bad? So pick up the story there.
Well, the only people that may have a reason to do that would be people whose own personal fortunes would be at risk if they didn't. You know, it's kind of like the old adage, Dr. Stan, if a bank lends me $10,000, I'm at the bank's mercy. If the bank lends me $10 million, the bank's at my mercy. So, you know, if they have a vested interest in seeing us stay alive, there might be a reason for them to work for us. But that gets away from the original place that we started in this discussion, and that is that there's been a new element brought into this whole equation, and that's called Al-Qaeda, that's called terrorism, that's called September 11th, and what is now happening to hasten this process, because as we stated earlier, Osama bin Laden, while he's evil, despicable, and Satan on earth, he runs Al-Qaeda like a Fortune 500 company with a very well-articulated plan to bring down the West. He realizes he cannot annihilate 275 million physical human beings, so he's going to attempt to try and disrupt our money system and may be rather successful in the process. We've put together a DVD entitled Terrorism, America's Response, A Citizen's Guide to Counterterrorism. And for the listeners of your radio show, Doctor, if they call 800-289-2646, it's a simple number to, if you have a pen, maybe we can say it again later in the broadcast, 800-289-2646, mention Dr. Stanley Monteith, they'll send you the DVD out at no charge, and it will give you an understanding of what's happening and how to best prepare for it. Or you can go to our website at SwissAmerica.com, that's all one word, SwissAmerica.com, and you'll see a little icon that says Terrorism America.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Craig Smith. Craig, would you want to put out your telephone number again and tell our listeners what they'll get if they call that number?
Sure. We've put together a DVD, Dr. Stan, entitled Terrorism, America's Response, A Citizen's Counterterrorism Guide, in essence. And if they simply call 800-289-2646. Again, maybe you can grab a pen during the course of the program. We'll give the number again. It's 800-289-2646. Or they can go to our website at Swiss America. That's all one word, SwissAmerica.com. Click on the little icon that says Terrorism, America's Response, and it will show you how to get a complimentary copy of the DVD. And it will actually show you how Al-Qaeda is going to soon bring this to a head. Dr. Stan, let me tell you, it is no surprise to me. We've been talking about this for months now, that you're going to see Al-Qaeda go after major financial icons in America. What could be more of a financial icon than Prudential, than Citigroup? Now we've known, as of today, Goldman Sachs has been added to the list. They're building in downtown Manhattan. The NASDAQ stock market site, the New York Stock Exchange, the World Bank, and the IMF. Because Al-Qaeda is smart enough to realize that the World Bank and the IMF is in collusion with the Federal Reserve. They realize that for them to be successful in their quest, they have to disrupt all those entities, not just one. And because our American stock market despises uncertainty so much, one of these facilities being attacked will send our stock market into a tailspin. Excuse me, I heard Larry Kudlow tonight on I think it was Chris Matthews, and I had to chuckle because he said, this won't hurt the American economy. Well, heck, that's surely not what happened on September 11, 2001. I mean, there were trillions of dollars that disappeared in economic wealth from our stock markets. It threw us into a recession. We lost a million jobs. We ran budget deficits, trade imbalances. We had gold go from $280 to $400. Oil virtually doubled. Well, it didn't double, but went up 70% in value. The reality is Al-Qaeda has its sights clearly set on us financially, Dr. Stan, and they are going to just accelerate what we have already caused ourselves. You know, I remember the time when Khrushchev slammed that shoe down, remember, and he said America will fall from within, they'll bury themselves. And we laughed when the Berlin Wall fell and said, oh, that old timer, you know, old coot needed to grow some hair, he didn't know what he was talking about. I got to tell you, I think Osama bin Laden might have a hand in making that a little bit more prophetic than some may think.
All right, fine. Well, we've got a couple of callers here. We've got Marie calling from Redwood City. Hi, Marie. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, hi. This is Ari from
Redwood City. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ari.
No problem. I'm curious about how much gold to hold. I hear a lot of people selling gold, saying, you know, put a small portion of your assets in gold, maybe 10 or 20%. But I'm wondering, why not put 80 or 90% in it? I mean, if the stock market could collapse, if real estate is about to, you know, bubble, where else is it safe to put your money except gold and silver coins? Maybe some bear market funds or what?
That's a great question, Ari, and let me answer it as honestly as I possibly can, and you probably won't like the answer, but it's the truth, because I happen to be in the gold business. Most of us suggest a 10 to 20% position in gold, because for us to suggest any more than that could create a lot of regulatory problems. We could have a lot of people breathing down our back saying you're causing doom and gloom and you're getting people to put all their money into gold. Another reason is because we don't know what's going to happen, and we know on a long-term basis the U.S. economy will ultimately recover. So if you have a hedge in place of 20%, then it will protect everything else. We don't look to make money in these markets. We look to stay even. So follow my analogy, if you will. If you have a baseball diamond and you have a guy in left field, center field, and right field, and let's say you've got gold is in your left field and stocks and bonds are in your center field and real estate and cash is in your right field, no matter where they hit the ball, you're going to catch it. If the system collapses, your gold will double or triple. Your stocks and bonds will fall in half, and your real estate will fall in half. So what you lose in your stocks and bonds and your real estate, you'll make up in your gold. So you'll stay even. If we're wrong and all of this is averted, your gold will maybe drop a little bit, your stocks and bonds will increase, your real estate will increase, and you'll stay even with the board. We're taking a defensive posture here. I don't like trading markets that are this uncertain. We were very positive about the stock market in 2000 because we believed it was well due for a recovery. So we did rather well in 2003 with a 25% recovery in the Dow and 50% recovery in the NASDAQ. But we've become bearish again because the indicators are showing us that things are a little bit top-heavy again. Right now, I would take a defensive posture, but we've always believed that you should have a minimum of 10% of your money in gold on a long-term basis to offset the devaluations of the currency, and that has proven to be a great strategy. But to answer your question in its purest form, you can't eat gold, and And to put all your eggs in one basket would be foolish economically, because the number one key in wise investing is diversification.
Okay, does that answer your question, Eric?
Yes, it does. One other question is, what's the safest way to hold gold? Is it, if you have a safe in your house, anybody with a metal detector could just find it and take it, and they even unbolt it from the floor, right? I mean, do you recommend safe deposit box, or how about one of those offshore places where you have an account and they reserve some gold for you?
I don't like offshore accounts because of the accessibility, Ari. The thing I don't like about that is that in the case of an emergency, if your money's in the Caymans or in Belgium or somewhere, how in the world do you get to it? What I suggest is private depositories, Brinks, Wells Fargo has private depositories in Phoenix. We have a wonderful one called Mountain Vaults. If you can't use those, I'd rather not discuss it over the air. If you call our offices at 800-289-2646, we can give you some suggestions that right within your home, we've been very, very successful where thieves wouldn't think to look in a million years unless they had several hours in your home to find the materials. We also know that people do what is referred to as midnight gardening. Now, of course, that doesn't work too well if you're in an apartment, but it works well if you have a piece of property. The thing I like, personally, is early American $20 gold pieces, because you can carry so much value in so small of a place. It's almost like diamonds, except diamonds are highly illiquid, and you can never really determine the value of them. $20 gold pieces, on the other hand, you can carry a large amount of money in a very small space, therefore making it very easy to secure it. And if you give the offices a call, if we can't help you, we can refer you to somebody that can. We don't suspect we could handle the needs of every single American. We have about 35,000 active clients. But I'm sure we can give you some suggestions and help you on how to best suit yourself. But I truly believe $20 gold pieces are the best way. They're non-confiscatable, they're non-reportable, there's no report at the time of sale, no report at the time of purchase, there's no titling involved. It's one of the very last private ways to own tangible assets in America.
Well, let me ask you, what about silver? Is there a place for a silver investment at this time in history, do you think?
Yes, there is. And of course, Dr. Stan, we've always referred to silver as the poor man's metal. And obviously the poor man's gold. And obviously silver recently has done incredibly well. Hats off to Ted Butler and some of the others who made those calls. And yes, we've seen a tremendous increase in early American silver dollars. Again, you do have the storage problem because silver is rather bulky. But if you go to early American silver dollars, we've seen the same type of percentage increases in those that you've had in silver bullion. But once again, you get the beauty of non-confiscatability, non-reportability, and being able to maintain your privacy. But again, those are issues that are so difficult to address over the air, because I'm sure you have a lot of fine listeners, but if you've got a few crooks that happen to listen, then you kind of give the secrets away.
All right, I think that's a very, very valid point. Anything else you want to say, Ari?
No, thanks a lot for the great suggestion.
Thanks so much. Let's go to Tim calling from Indianapolis. Hi, Tim. How are you doing?
Oh, hi, guys. I just had a quick statement and a couple quick questions. I think George Bush, the New World Order agent, is doing a great job for the Rothschilds, international banking Gestapo, putting us deeper in hock. And my question is, are silver and gold mining, is gold and silver mining active today, or is it waning? And what industries are conducive to using gold and silver?
All right, that's a very legitimate question. Is the gold and silver mining going on today? And
yes.
What are the industrial uses for gold and silver? Are there any of the primarily monetary metals?
Yes, well, of course, the four favorite metals that are out there right now, actually five favorite metals, Dr. Stanley, are gold, silver, platinum, palladium, and now rhodium, believe it or not. Rhodium has now been classified as a precious metal. Let's talk about industrial uses. First off, gold, as we know, is the most highly malleable material on the face of the earth. You can take a small ounce of gold and pound it into a fine enough sheet that you can cover a football field with it. So it's extremely malleable, extremely conductive, and therefore it has a lot of application in computer use and high technology applications. Silver, as we know, we use a lot of it in still in good old-fashioned x-rays and photo processing, although digital photography is making that less and less. Silver has a lot of antiseptic properties to it, as you know, as a doctor, so therefore it can be used in a lot of wonderful health applications. Platinum and palladium are catalysts, which are used in catalytic converters and processing crude oils into gasolines, and of course rhodium is the most uncorrosive metal in the world and gives you the ability to once again have a metal that has a catalytic property that has no corrosion aspect to it. Mining is going on. Matter of fact, that's another way to own gold. We don't sell gold stocks because we believe that it's owning a piece of paper. But if you don't have the convenience of being able to take physical possession, owning gold stocks is a wonderful way to own the precious metals and get the value of the markets going up and down. The only thing we don't like about it is, A, there's a record that you purchased it, and B, it is a piece of paper, which is a promise to pay you something. And to me, you know, if I have a piece of paper that says I have something, then my asset, its quality is dictated by somebody else's performance. Where in the case of if I have an ounce of gold in my hand, it's my asset and it's not somebody else's liability. And I happen to like that aspect of gold. But gold stocks and mining stocks, I think, are going to do rather well. But once again, I think they're just going to keep up with inflation, Dr. Stan. If inflation runs 5 to 10% a year, you'll see gold stocks go up 5 to 10% a year.
All right. Well, of course, my concern is that we could have a real financial crisis in the United States simply because we have a house of cards. We have nothing at all behind our currency. And, of course, we look to Alan Greenspan to make this system work. Now, they have, I think it's an amazing thing. I look back to 1980 when we were running an inflation rate of, I don't know, 15, 16, 18%. And certainly it was Paul Volcker who raised the interest rates, I think, up to 19. Some people say 17. But
no, 22% was the high.
22% interest rates. And that was how they had to dampen the inflation. Now, what happened was, of course, then Ronald Reagan comes in, he immediately cuts taxes to get the economy going again, just as 20 years before that in 1960, John Kennedy had cut taxes to get the economy going. 1980, Ronald Reagan cuts taxes to get the economy going. The year 2000, George Bush cuts taxes to get the economy going. And, of course, each at a 20-year increment. But unfortunately, economic response to that, which should have been a booming economy in the year 2004, and we don't have a booming economy in 2004 because superimposed upon our economy is this process of globalization, which involves shipping our jobs and our industries overseas and progressively lowering the value of our currency. So we have things here that we've never seen before. We've never had this effort, a conscious effort to redistribute the wealth of our nation to other countries. What impact does globalization play in this scenario that you're outlining?
Well, you just said it. It's a redistribution of wealth to other nations. I mean, we've got to keep in mind that the average citizen of the world travels by ox cart. They don't have wall-to-wall carpeting or tile in their home. And we find that difficult to believe because we live in the most prosperous land in the world. But clearly, the world would like to see them pulled up a little bit and us brought down a touch.
Now, where would we get an ox today? I just don't know how it would go. Go ahead.
Well, but I'm just saying, I mean, that's the statistics. I mean, if you look at South America, the jungles, and you look at some of the outback places in China, I mean, you know, most people sleep on dirt floors. They don't sleep on carpeted floors as it relates to world population. But nevertheless, the whole issue is globalization has played a major impact, but Dr. Stan, we cannot underestimate the value of, and I hate even calling it value, because we can't underestimate the devastation September 11th of 2001 had on us economically here in America. You talked about tax cuts. The very first tax cut we had was actually back in 1921 through 1925 when Andrew Mellon, the Secretary of our Treasury, cut taxes from a 73% rate to 25%. And he shifted the revenue burden, which was about 85% on the lower income earners of America, to the higher income earners. And it turned out higher income earners paid 100% more in taxes, and the lower income earners ended up paying 27% versus 85%. But nevertheless, you're right. Tax cuts don't work because we don't have an honest money system. And so we're going to have these inflations and recessions and depressions and expansions until we go back to an honest money system. On my website at SwissAmerica.com, if you put Alan Greenspan in the search engine or Gold and Economic Freedom, he wrote a brilliant white paper in 1966 entitled Gold and Economic Freedom, and he showed how the system cannot continue to function unless we go back on a gold standard, yet I don't see him calling for a gold standard. Now, of course, he just celebrated, I think it was his 78th or 79th birthday, so I doubt he's thinking long-term anymore, Dr. Stan. But I can tell you this, that globalization has had a major impact. We've got to make sure that we don't export jobs anymore. But why are we exporting the jobs, Dr. Stan? It's because America has the second highest tax rate, corporate tax rate, in the world, the first being Japan. That's why the Japanese are building car manufacturing facilities in America, trying to escape the high taxation in Japan. If we were to lower our corporate tax rates and make it conducive for corporations to do business in America, instead of having them meander through all the loopholes of the IRS code, we'd be in much better shape. That's why I believe that corporations should pay a flat tax, average consumers should pay a flat tax, and there should be a value-added tax for specific items.
And of course, we are actually rewarding these corporations, but if they go overseas and invest in China, they don't have to pay the high taxes here at home. They get a much lower tax rate as long as they don't bring their money back to the United States. So we're doing everything we can to impoverish our country and to decrease investment in America. Why would anybody in their right mind do that?
I'm not sure they're doing it as much out of design, Dr. Stan, as they're doing it out of ignorance in some cases, because they've bought into Keynesian economics. And most people don't understand that John Maynard Keynes, his economic theories were flawed. He didn't believe in generational transition of wealth for personal reasons, which I prefer not to discuss because they're rather controversial on your program.
No, that's all right. But he was a homosexual. He didn't believe in children.
You got it right. And as a direct result of that, he believed, who gives a you-know-what if we pass the debt on to the next generation, because there aren't going to be any generations because I don't have kids because I have a gay partner. And I'm not blaming the homosexual community for this. I'm just saying that that was part of the flaw of his thesis. And yet we still have Keynesians that run the world. I mean, my goodness, if you look at Alan Greenspan, he is really an Ayn Rand thinker when you come to terms with things. I mean, he didn't buy into Keynesian economics, but he was forced by his colleagues. Suffice to say, there is a goal line. And if you were to tell me 10 years ago, Doctor, that you thought that the bubble was getting ready to hit the pinprick, I would say, I think, you know, that sounds good in theory, but I don't think it'll happen. I do believe we are going to see a hyperinflationary depression within the next 10 years of America. I think what's going to emerge out of it is a completely new money system. It's going to be a money system that's based on gold and silver, because we have historic precedent of showing how well it works. It will restore honest money, which will thus restore honest government, and we will once again have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Short of that, I see revolution in our future, to be quite honest with you, because I've done 16 shows today, Dr. Stan, and I can tell you, I've done everything from WABC Radio in New York City to your program tonight, closing my evening out, and people in America are mad. Whether it's somebody in New York City calling in, I mean, people are angry, Dr. Stan.
Well, I hope they're letting them know that there's not much difference between Party A and Party B, because they're both going the same direction.
You're absolutely correct, and average Americans are thinking that way now. They're saying, tell me the difference between George Bush and John Kerry. There is no difference. They're both cut out of the same sheet. And if it doesn't change, you will see a revolution. I have watched, and you have too, from your programs and your mingling with people, Dr. Stan, for the last 20 years, people have been rather apathetic. We go to the rallies, we preach it, we scream it, but nobody does anything. Well, I got news for you, and I think you know this. Americans are really starting to get angry. And you get them angry enough, they'll fight. That's what the American Revolution was about. That's what the Civil War was about. And I have a feeling we're quickly moving to that point. And it wouldn't surprise me to see unions start to create work stoppages and having people saying, I'm not going to show up to work, or people protesting paying taxes. I do believe change is coming. But my big fear right now, Dr. Stan, is the terrorism. It's real. We are going to have another attack. I just got this across the Bloomberg wire earlier, just before I came on your program. Al-Qaeda plans pre-election attack next month. A member of Al-Qaeda told UK interrogators the group has plans for an attack in September, 2 months before the U.S. presidential election. The Al-Qaeda operative, considered credible by British intelligence, said the attack is planned for 60 days before the election of November 2nd. So that's why I can't implore your listeners enough to pick up a phone and call 800-289-2646. Mention that you've listened to the Dr. Stanley Monteith Show. They will send you out a DVD called Terrorism, America's Response. It will help you understand this problem. Again, the number is 800-289-2646, or you can go to the website at SwissAmerica.com. Click on the terrorism icon. It will show you how to get a copy of this DVD. We had 10,000 of them that were donated free. And, you know, after today, Doctor, quite frankly, I don't know how many are left. So,
right, well,
if your people call and they're gone, I apologize. But as of last count, I think there was about 1,000 of them left. So hopefully there'll still be plenty when your people call.
Well, we've got John on the line, but we're out of time. Thank you so very much for being with us, Craig. It's been a real pleasure. And I hope Bob will get a chance to talk to. Won't have to wait another 15 years to get together again.
We'll do it again soon. Nice being with you, Dr. Stan.
Good night and God bless.
Bye now.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got John sitting on the line. If John would like to wait and talk to me after the program, I'd be glad to talk to him. But we're already out of time because we have to take this moment to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener supported. And if you believe in that, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle, that behind everything going on are these powerful spiritual forces, that this whole idea of central banking originated with the Knights Templar back in the 1200s, and they were Luciferian. The purpose of the central banks today is to draw us into a one world government in preparation for the coming of the Antichrist. So we have a political forces at work, and we have geopolitical forces, and then we have spiritual forces. And our job is to try to make people understand how this all fits together. It's not happening by accident. It's happening by intent. There is a master plan. It's being carried out. Their plan is to impoverish the American people. And that was, I was asking, how we might be able to get an ox here if they're going to, of course, create true equality throughout the world. We may need one to pull our wagons. Absurd? Well, we live in a world gone mad, and there are only a few of us already still sane, and there are an awful lot of people who think we're quite mad. So, under any circumstances, if you'd like to get our material, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a copy of our latest newsletter that tells you what really happened on the morning of September 11th, I think our next newsletter will deal with the financial problems that we're facing and try to put them into perspective so you can see not only what's happening financially and politically, but spiritually as well. So remember, at least for the July newsletter that tells you what happens on September 11th and tells you about the smoking gun in the September 11th report that nobody in the media has picked up on, and certainly the 911 commission didn't include it in their report, but it's all there. It's pretty obvious what happened that morning. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to get Thomas Friend's book, The Fallen Angel, the video. They sold their souls for rock and roll, either the 4-hour or the 10-hour version of that. Remember our program here on the 6th of November all day long. Give us a call if you'd like to come. They're going to be serving lunch. Start early in the morning, go until 5. A fantastic program. Looking forward to seeing you, so put that aside on your schedule. So until tomorrow, please pray for America. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until then, may the Lord be with you.